woman who lives in Las Vegas, who's been listening to my shiurim for 20 years. She's I don't say how old she is. She's a grandmother a number of times over, and she says she's my groupie. I've groupies in Vegas. So I do believe her that she's listened to hundreds of my shiurim, and she decided that Yosef was my favorite character. After listening to all the shiurim, that's what she decided. So who am I to argue, because there's no question that she's listened to more of my shiurim than I have. And with me, like, it can change from week to week, and for that matter, from year to year. But whether Yosef is the favorite character or not, what I can tell you is that entering this part, entering into Vayeshev till the end of Bereshit, the shift really does take place between the story of, let's say, in the beginning we had pre-Avot, and that's really the way that I would look at it. We have pre-Avot, where we can throw in all the Adam and Chava and Noach and all those stories before, and then Avraham gets on the scene, and then it becomes the Avot story, and even, or if you want, maybe it's more politically correct for me to say the Avot and the Imahot story, but whatever. But it becomes the Avot story, and then real clearly we have Avraham and Sarah as the stars, and suddenly they disappear, and then Yitzchak and Rivka, and there it's much more equal. They take the place, and then it's Yaakov and his whole family, and then at some point the shift takes place where Yaakov is still around. I mean, just like if you do the math, you come to this strange realization, which Rashi makes the observation in the middle of Perek Lamed Zayin, that Yitzchak is still here during Mechirat Yosef. Yitzchak is still alive. Yaakov, Avram is still alive when past the bar mitzvah, quote unquote, of both Yaakov and Esav. According to the math, as far as we understand it, they're 15 years old when Avram passes away, but Avram's no longer there, and for that matter, Yitzchak is no longer of significance. And what happens with Yaakov is therefore also interesting, because Yaakov is always there in the background, but Yaakov sort of is pushed aside. Rachel passes away, and we never hear of Leah again, except for like this one thing about whatever it is that Reuven did. But it gets that whole generation gets pushed aside, and now we have this new generation. And the new generation, we have a conflict. We have a very challenging conflict, and a very difficult conflict, and a conflict which, perhaps on a certain level, is a conflict which is still impacting us today. And that's the conflict between Yosef and his brothers. Now, is it true that when I look at Yosef and his brothers, I root for Yosef? Of course it's true. Am I the only one that does this, or do all of us feel some type of an affinity with Yosef as we read this? Perhaps it's because Yosef is a victim, perhaps it's for other reasons, but we do feel this connection with Yosef. Enough talking. Let's start to learn. Ela told Dot Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvasrei Shana, Haya Roe Tachav Bitzon, Vahunarat ben Bilhav ben Zilpa, Nishe Aviv, Vyave Yosef et Dibatam Ra'a, Elavihim. That is an unbelievable pasuk. By the way, I hope you realize we could have, but we're not going to. We could have spent the whole hour on that pasuk. First of all, Ela told Dot Yaakov, Yosef, right? What is the generations? What is the history, the biography of Yaakov? It's really Yosef. And on the one hand, we'll find some commentaries talking about the affinity between Yaakov and Yosef, the connection between Yaakov and Yosef, the similarity between Yaakov and Yosef. But still, it's really interesting to make that statement. Yosef is 17 years old. Haya ro'eh et achav batzon. What in the world that phrase means? That is Yosef a shepherd, or is Yosef never a shepherd? Does Yosef shepherd his brothers? Does it meaning what exactly does this mean? V'hu na'ar. What does the word na'ar mean? Does na'ar in this instance imply, as there is a certain approach in Chazal, as a certain level of immaturity? Incidentally, the word na'ar is used when it refers to Yeshua's relationship with Moshe, and there's no indication of immaturity in that sense. Hunar b'nei Bilhav b'nei Zilpa nishe Aviv. So that also is a real interesting statement. And I will explain to you how Yosef's decency causes all the difficulties, just from this pasuk of what he did right and what he did wrong. V'yaveh Yosef adibatam ra elavihim. So Yosef, we have no idea what this means. He's ro'e etachav batzon, he's narit b'nei bilhav b'nei dizilpa, and he brings dibatam ra elavihim. So, there are all types of possibilities. I'm going to make this simple, maybe overly simple, by telling you how I understand what this says. First of all, what's very interesting is B'nai Bilha, B'nai Zilpa are referred to over here as Nishe Aviv. Now, that's one of the things you always have to pay attention to is relationships. What is exactly the status of Bilha and Zilpa, and for that matter, what is the status of the children? When Reuven climbs into the bed with Bilha, I know there's a whole cover up there. When Reuven climbs into the bed, what is it that it calls Bilha in that sense? There she's called a Pilegesh. So is right? Is this correct or incorrect? Vayehi bishkon Yisrael ba'aretz vayelech Reuven yishkav et Bilha Pilegesh Aviv, which tells you. By the way, now you have the tools to start putting together the whole thing. What happened? Reuven looks at Bilha as being a pilegish of his father. Matter of fact, as far as he's concerned, who's the real wife?
Leah.
Leah is the real wife. Who's the pretender who can also claim to be wife? Rachel. So that's right there is where we have our problems. We have the Rachel and the Leah divide, but we have then Rachel playing unfair, and you can tell me, no, it's very fair, but she plays unfair because she can't have a child. She brings Bilha into the relationship. Why did Sarah bring Hagar into the relationship? And by the way, before you answer me, I can ask you the same question again. And what was the relationship between Avraham and Hagar? Was she a Pilegesh or was she an Isha? Don't answer me because you need to read every single time Hagar is related to, be it by Sarah, be it by Avram, be it by God, be it by the Malach, to see how she's referred to. And there is a lack of consistency there, but it may depend on who sees her and which way they see her. So now I'll start again. Why does Avraham bring Hagar, or sorry, other way around, why does Sarah bring Hagar in? She brings Hagar in because Avram can't have a child. Yes, she can't have a child, but there is this sense that Avram, or if you want, it's not just her infertility. The problem is who's going to take over for Avraham afterwards. Over here, Avraham already has children. Yaakov already has children. We already have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Already has children. And now Rachel decides that she needs to have a child. If she doesn't have a child, then she's absolutely worthless, which itself is very interesting. And we understand her, but it's very interesting, the emotion that comes out, the expression that she has over here, her sense that within a Jewish community, I know that that's totally unfair to say, but the sense within a Jewish community of not having a child, about how one feels within the community over here, she feels that her life is worthless without a child, and perhaps it reminds us of Chana and of Tfilat Chana, which will come obviously later on, but she now brings Bilha in. At this point, we have Leah responding, what, you're the only one who's going to have children? She brings Zilpah in, which, by the way, that really seems to be unnecessary, right? That seems to be unnecessary. But you do get the sense that there is some kind of level of jealousy going on, and the word jealousy is used. The word jealousy is used in that chapter. That's where jealousy is introduced. So now, let's start all over again. Yaakov at this point has 12 sons and one daughter. Who is of the highest status and who is of the lowest status? So that question may well be determined by who you ask. So let's ask Yaakov. So Yaakov, we're told, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Mugur Aviv be'eretz Kanaan, Eila told it Yaakov, Yosef. Which means the Torah over here is attesting that there's something special, and it'll get clearer as we read the next pasuk. But before we get to the next pasuk, Yosef is 17 years old, and who does Yosef decide to stay with, to play with, and maybe even to defend? Because the whole problem here really rests on Vayaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'ah el avihim. Who's dibara'ah? which means, and there's different possibilities. Yosef is coming and telling their father that somebody is behaving improperly. So what are the possibilities? Is it B'nai Bila and Zilpah, or is it B'nai Leah? Is it the way that B'nai Leah treat B'nai Bila and Zilpah? So here you'll find, at first of all, those commentaries go in different directions. It makes more sense that it's B'nai Leah who are pushing down B'nai Bila and B'nai Zilpah. Why? Because now let's go back to the hierarchy within the family. B'nai Leah may think that they're special, and Reuven may be the oldest, and now we realize there may already be intrigue with Reuven, because he may already have messed up, which means there's more than one firstborn. Matter of fact, there are four firstborns. Where do you see the issue of the firstborns coming to light? You can't answer. You answer, they'll think that you're cheating. Where does it come out? It comes out by the tribes that don't want to enter the land of Israel. Reuven, Gad, and Menashe are all firstborn. We wanted Tamar to be able to answer that question. She wrote a book on this. Right. So what we find is that we have Makat Bechorot. Right? Makat Bechorot. There's something with the firstborn. So there are multiple firstborn over here. But who are the ones who are the real ones who can claim that they're the firstborn? Yosef. And Yosef and Reuven are the real firstborn. But this all comes down to another question, and that is the status of B'nai Bila and B'nai Zilpah. So, Yosef sees that B'nai Leah treat B'nai Bila and Zilpah in a very low level. They look down on them. Why should they look down on them? Because if they push them down, they become more important. Because as of right now, what do we have? We have Yosef, who's one of the youngest children, not the youngest, but now you realize at the same time, more or less, that you have B'nai Bila and then B'nai Zilpah, at around more or less the same time, you have Yisachar and Zvulun being born, and then you have Yosef being born, which means Yosef's a little younger than the rest, but there's a whole bunch of kids right there being born around the same time. Again, with Reuven and Shimon and Levi being considerably older than the other ones, you then have Binyamin, who's considerably younger, who's not really, should we call him, he's not really a contender at this point, because he's much younger than the others. Which means you have Binyamin, who's off on the side, but he does have the advantage of being the son of Rachel. And then we have Yosef, which means it's basically Yosef who is the favorite son, the son of the favorite wife, and now, the rest of them. So B'nai Leah, they look down on the B'nai Bila and B'nai Zilpah. Why? Because that way they get elevated. And that way, yeah, Yosef's most important, but they're so second most important, and then the other ones are lower. Now they may, again, they're midrashim about this, they may call them slaves, they may look down on them, they may say, hey, go fetch me something, go do something, and treat them as servants, treat them at a lower level. So who's the one who reports on them? Yosef reports on them. Why does Yosef report on them? So now I could say, Yosef does this for the best possible intentions. Why? Because Yosef is the one who feels that we should all be the same, we should all be equal, and we should all be the, right? And there's only one problem with that. What does he accomplish by doing this? What he accomplishes is that B'nai Leah end up looking worse, B'nai Bila will get elevated, but it's not going to make a difference because he's still the son of Rachel and he's still the favorite. Which means all that he ends up accomplishing over here is putting down the children of Leah, not really lifting up the children of Bila and Zilpah, although we can argue on that point, but none of them are going to reach his level. Yosef, for his part, may be actually very, very sincere. This is not some kind of a Machiavellian plot over here in order to make the others look bad. Yosef is saying this is not right, which is is very easy to do when you have the status of favorite son, and you're saying, well, the rest of you should treat one another nicely, right? But that's the way it may be. It may be perceived. When we look at the next pasuk, we're told, "V'Yisrael ahavet Yosef mikol banav ki ven zakunim hulo v'saluk tonet pasim." Now, obviously, or not obviously, this is the most important pasuk over here. So, and also, I'm not even going to bother asking you what you noticed, because I let you all cheat by bolding the things that are important to notice. The first thing which is important is that we just now shifted between Yaakov and Yisrael. And it's one of these things that we never know exactly what's going on between Yaakov and Yisrael, but our sense is that Yaakov is more of the individual and Yisrael is more of the nation. Which means that whenever somebody tells you, but Yaakov loved Yosef more than his other children, that may not be true. It may not be true that Yaakov loved Yosef more than his other children. Yisrael did. So what's the difference between Yaakov doing versus Yisrael? Well, I think there must be some difference, so the Torah would not have shifted from one place to the other. Just the shift is what's interesting, and therefore it's compelling. Is it Yisrael wearing his national hat? Is it that Yisrael sees something in Yosef? Which leads us to the second question. What exactly does Ben Zakunim mean? If Ben Zakunim is taken in the sense that it means the youngest son, which I think that there's biblical support for, the important place to look is the speech that Yehuda gives, where he will use the term as well. What exactly does Ben Zakunim mean? If it means the youngest son, then we just have to stop a second and say, but he's not the youngest son. There is a younger son. Binyamin is the youngest son. Binyamin is the Ben Zakunim. So what in the world can Ben Zakunim mean over here? Which leads us to a second possible interpretation of the word Zaken, of the word elder. The word elder sometimes means chacham, and that's the way that Uncle is translated, Ben Bar Chakim. He is a very wise son. He's a very capable son. Which means Yosef is somebody who's incredibly wise and incredibly capable, and that is the tragedy of Yosef's life, because every single person who ever meets him sees it immediately, the capability of Yosef. There's only one group of people who refuse to see it, and that's his brothers. Which means he gets to Potiphar's house, he's put in charge. He gets to prison, he's put in charge. He gets to Pharaoh's house, he's put in charge. Everybody who sees him notices this. And the first one who notices it, of course, is, and that's why we have to be careful again, the first one who notices it is Yisrael. Yisrael. V'Yisrael ahavet Yosef mikol banav ki ven zakunim hulo. Now, the subtlety that I just now pointed out, that this is Yisrael and not Yaakov. By the way, any of you buy this or no? You have to. I mean, that's what it says, right? Good. No choice. You have to buy it. On the other hand, do the brothers necessarily appreciate the distinction? Or the brothers just look at treatment? So how does it end up? V'asa lo ktonet pasim. And he made for him a ktonet pasim. So the ktonet pasim is understood, and I've seen really, well, there's three different ways. One is to say it's just completely, it's just nice. Just, it's a very nice coat with lots of colors. Any of you want to go that way? The other way to go is one of two. One way to go is to say that it may be some kind of foreshadowing of the big day kahuna, the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Now the reason to go in that direction is the word ktonet is used in that connection. And it comes down to identifying what is the significance of being a Bechor. What is the significance of being the firstborn? So in the time prior to Levi or Aaron being elevated to Kohen, we find that the Bechor had the status of the one who would serve God. So there are some commentaries who therefore see this in this direction. And by the way, they'll understand therefore also when Esav sells the Bechor to Yaakov, Ayiv is Esav to Bechorah, there's great irony in that, because Esav is one who is not queasy at all about spilling blood, but to use that capability to bring Korbanot one day in the Mishkan is something he's not interested in doing. That bothers him. Vayivez, meaning he'll go hunting, he'll kill things, but to be Oved et Hashem by bringing Korban out, I hope there's no vegetarians here, then that's something which bothers him. So over here, to therefore to use the whenever we see Bechor. Now again, the weakness of this approach is really taking a Shemot orientation and reading it into Sefer Bereshit. So then, as I said, you can decide if that's fair or if it's not fair. It is true, in the first part of Shemot, we're going to find that the Bechor is the one who will supposed to be working all the way by Har Sinai. It's happening. They may have lost their job by the Egel. It may have been that day that they actually worked. They worked the Mizbeach that day, which may have been a very unfortunate decision. So that's one approach that one can take to the special clothing. The other approach that one can take is what we do is something very, very simple. When you don't know what something means, either a word or a term, you go searching throughout Tanakh and say, is this phrase ever used in any other place? And lo and behold, Ketonet Pasim is used in another place. And what is the place that it's used? And the context is? Excuse me? No. Ketonet Pasim is used in source number 5. Now, what's interesting about source number 5 is, can you imagine Yaakov here? Okay, just one second. Let's do this a little bit better. Remember, we're going to go to 5 in a second. Before we go that, before we go there, let's read Pasuk Dalet first. Vayiru echav ki oto ohev avihim. They see that Yosef is loved by their father. Do they make any distinction between Yaakov and Yisrael? Absolutely not. There basically, it goes down to one point. Who gets the job? So what's the answer? Who gets the job? The favorite son gets the job. Or is it the son who's most capable gets the job? But they see that their father loves him. They don't see that Yisrael loves him. So again, I'm going to say that there may be some real basic misinformation or misinterpretation going on. And what does it say next? And this, you know, is like a dagger. This really hurts. The next word, vayisna'u oto. And they hated him. By the way, you realize the oto, as much as you don't want to admit it, can go in two different directions? Right. So obviously all of us, yes? Obviously all of us reads it. Who do they hate? Yeah, but there may be something Oedipal going on over here anyway, that because they know when it comes down to it, it's their father who may on some level they hate. And that, did you ever consider that before? That that's what this means? That they, it's okay, neither did I. Right. We're not up to Vayosifu yet. But clearly over here, when we continue, that the hatred is directed towards Yosef. I'm just pointing out, it's interesting the Torah wrote it in a way. Okay. But I'm saying when you read the next pasuk, v'chalom Yosef chalom v'yigeid lechav Yosefu otzno oto. So I'm just pointing out is that it most likely will go in that direction. But anyway, the result over here is that suddenly we have favoritism and hatred. You know, these two opposites. Favoritism and hatred, which of course can go together. So of course you can imagine Yaakov saying, why can't you just get along with one another? Why can't brothers love one another? Right? The way it's supposed to be. Tamar, like, do I just now set that up now? What? No. Why can't? No, it's worse than that. Which then leads us to source number 5. Does anybody know what the context of source number 5 is? It's within David's family, where there may be some type of favoritism or something else. Over here, we actually have what maybe Yaakov wanted. We have a brother who loves his sister. Only problem is that he loves her completely in the wrong way. And right over here, we're dealing with the story of Amnon v'Tamar, who went and thought he loved her, but ended up raping her and then throwing her out. And here is the aftermath of that. V'yikra'ed na'aro mishartov v'yom mishalchunat zot me'alai achutza una'al adelet acharea v'alek tonet pasim ki kein tilbashna binot ha'melech habetulot me'ilim. So what are we told over here? That this is the only other context we have tonet pasim. The Ramban points this out, by the way. It's the only other context. But so what does it say is a tonet pasim? It's saying it's clothing of royalty. Inter-family intrigue it's totally the wrong use of the word love, but what we have is an outrage taking place within a family. The issue, by the way, of who will be king afterwards, of Avshalom, Amnon, Adoniah, and so on, is actually far more important here than I am currently admitting, but we're here for one reason only, and look at that. We found a ketonet pasim, which means if we therefore say that this is royal garb, that this is the clothing that somebody wears when they are a prince or a princess, so now we have just now gained more insight. That means that Yaakov, or let's be more technical, Yisrael loves Yosef, and therefore he gives him the royal clothing, and therefore he is saying that one day he will be king. And that's something which some of the people there may not be happy. Now, how do I know that this is really the context? How do I know that this is what's happening? So on the one hand, it's going to come up very, very quickly. On the other hand, it already came up. So where it already came up, we missed it completely. We paid no attention to it. It was the end of last week's parsha, and it's in source number 8. Ve'ela hamalachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom lifnei malach melech lifnei Yisrael. What did the Torah just now do? What did the Torah just now tell you to think about? Even if it told you don't think about it. What did it just now tell you to think about? It told you to think about kings. Where was this pasuk written? This is Perek Lamed Vav, pasuk Lamed Aleph. We're right after that. It finishes the whole list of the best translation I saw was the dukes, Aluf, the dukes of Edom, right? You have a better translation than that? The dukes of Edom coming afterwards. And right afterwards we have, okay, that part began, Ela Toldot Esav. And when it talks about Toldot Esav, it talks about the kings that ruled before there was a king of Israel. And now it says, Ela Toldot Yaakov, Yosef. So when we read this by itself, which obviously you now realize is a mistake, when you read this by itself, we just think about this family intrigue in Yaakov's tent. No. It has to be compared back to what we just now read before about Esav, and the issue is one of who will be king. This question of who will be king becomes the major question from here all the way to the end of Sefer Bereishit. This is the question. This is the topic. And as much as we may miss it, and as much as we may look at it as personal or family intrigue, this is the question which is really going to emerge. Let's go back to source number 1, Perek Lamed Zayin. He has a dream, and again they hate him more, and they can't say anything nice to him. Pasuk Hey, v'yachalom Yosef chalom, v'yaged le'echav, v'yisifu od sno oto. So they hate him even more. V'yomer le'em shim unah chalom azer sher chalamti. Yosef has to insist to share with them his dream. V'nei nachnum alumim alumim mitoch hasadeh, v'nei kama alumati, v'gam nitzva v'hena, tisubena alumotechem, v'tishtachavena alumati. All of your stalks will bow down to mine. V'yomu lo achiv, hamaloch timloch aleinu. Will you be the king on top of us? Imashol timshol banu? Are you going to rule over us? So I'm going to ask you again, what is the context over here? If this is the words that they can get out of their mouth, so I'll say it again. I know that kingship is the issue. I know this in terms of Yisrael loving him. I know in terms of him being ben zikunim, if terribly capable. I know this in terms of the comparison or the contrast with the whole family and the kings who ruled in Esav before they ruled by Yisrael. I know this because of the Ketonet Pasim. And I know this because this is exactly the words that come out of the brother's mouth. So when you have like 5 indications for something, you should at that point be pretty convinced that that is indeed the case. Yes? Yes? Continue. By the way, this is one of the places that people quote the Vilna Gaon when he says, Ki la Hashem hamlucha moshel bagoyim. There's a difference between being a melech versus being a moshel. That a melech is somebody who's coronated. Melech is somebody who we accept as a melech. A moshel is a dictator. And they say to him, Hamloch temloch aleinu. Are you going to be the king over us? And what's their response to that? Absolutely never. We will never accept you. Hamoshel temshol banu? And do you think you're going to end up becoming the ruler over us? It's not going to happen. Of course it does happen. Only question is, what ends up happening? Does Yosef end up becoming a melech for them or a moshel for them? It's also interesting to look later on how he's referred to later on in terms of what his job is in Egypt is and how the brothers describe what his job in Egypt is. But we can put it this way, they never accept him as king. They do have no choice but to accept him as a moshel, and they feel they need to say this. V'yisivu od sno oto. Well, I think we're up to 3 now. This is sno to the 3rd power. Al chalamoto v'al dvarav. V'chalam od chalom acher v'yisaper oto le'echav. V'yomineh chalamti chalom od v'inei ha'shemesh v'erech v'achad asar kochavim mishtachavim li. Everything keeps bowing down to him. V'yisaper el aviv v'elachiv v'yig'ar bo aviv v'yomer lo ma chalom hazeh shechalam tavo navo ani v'imecha v'achecha l'shtachavot l'cha aretza v'yikanehu bo echav. So now we have another word coming in. What's the other word? Is kin'ah. We have jealousy. And previously, the jealousy began where? Don't go back all the way to Cain and Hevel. It said that Rachel, it said that, use the word kin'ah by Rachel compared to Leah. She was jealous that Leah had all these children, and now all these children are jealous of the son that she produces. Va'aviv shamar et davar. Which, again, I would just ask you now to just to go back and to read this whole section and compare it to the intrigue going on in David HaMelech's house, because there is a parallel between these sections, both when the father hears and how he looks at it, and how, you know, the father knows what's going on, but it's still some, at least till this point. Of course, in David's house, what's going to end up happening is Avshalom's going to end up killing Amnon, and Avshalom's going to end up also dead. And by the way, with David's house, we're told by Chazal that all of these children are actually Ben Yifat Tohar. They were all children of these women that David had taken, these beautiful women that he was taken, which means that David displayed poor impulse control. He took these people, he had children who displayed more poor impulse control, which just goes to that whole section in the beginning of Kitetse, when you see the Yifat Tohar, and then Chazal say, but this will lead to this, and this will lead to this, and this will lead to this. The best example Chazal could have brought is, and look what happened in David HaMelech's house, because all of these things end up happening over there, including having a Ben Soromora in the most literal sense who rebels against him, and that's Avshalom. So I said all of these things, the poor impulse control, the rebellion, the love or the hatred or the not real love, all of it's right here in David's house. As I said, this can all be compared to what we have over here. Continue. Pasuk Yud Bet. V'yalchu echav l'ro'ot etzon avihim b'shchem. And the brothers go to see what their father's, how the flock is doing in Shechem. Where did they live at this point? Where did the family live? Well, where did the family pitch its tent? Chevron. So I'm going to point out again now. From here to the end of the Sefer, the struggle is going to be between Yehuda, and we don't know it yet, and Yosef. The two locations that we're dealing with, you have this in your book? The two locations that we're dealing with are the location that one day will be the location of Yehuda's, which will be Hebron, and the location which will one day be from Yosef's, which is Shechem. Which means it's not just the Yosef-Yehuda tension, it's also as manifested by these two different locations over here, which also should be giving us some kind of a hint of what's going to unfold from this, which will have various Gilgulim at different points in history. They go off, and although, also noticed another thing. Yosef had two dreams. One dream was about what? What was it about? Okay, the other dream. Okay, well, the first dream, what was it about? Sheaves. Second dream was about, right. If you will, we can continue with the metaphor of Yaakov's dream, where it's the ground and the sky, right? You have the ladder which connects the ground to the sky. Yosef's two dreams together take us someplace near Yaakov's. But there's something else which is interesting, and this I saw in the Chamesh Drashoter of Soloveitchik. What do the brothers do for a living? The brothers were shepherds. What is Yosef dreaming of? He's dreaming of being a farmer, which means our old Cain and Hevel tension has suddenly re-emerged over here. And which was which? What did Cain do for a living? What did Hevel do for a living? Cain was the farmer, and Hevel was the shepherd. What do the brothers do? The brothers are shepherds. What does Cain do? Well, what does Yosef do? Yosef is dreaming of a very Cain type of existence. Of course, there's another element to this, not just Cain and Hevel. What's the other element to this? That you can only... You can only be a farmer if the land is yours. You can only be a farmer if you have permanence with this land. You can only be a farmer if you think you're going to be living in one place for more than four consecutive seasons. But what kind of person can deal with their herds? Nomads can go from place to place to place, right? Especially in this area, I suspect you see a lot of it. Suddenly, A whole clan has come and pitched their tent, and then by the next season that clan is gone, and or hopefully is gone. Which means the brothers, as much as we don't want to think of it in that way, the brothers are nomads. The brothers, even though they will one day own this land, they don't own the land yet. It's not theirs yet. Yosef, on the other hand, he's a dreamer. He sees the future. This land will be ours. Yosef is already living in the future. Yosef is saying that, no, one day this land will be ours, but even at that point, I'm going to have, well, if you want, he'll have a double portion, or at least a double portion. If you want, he's going to have much more of this land. But the brothers don't know what he's talking about. I mean, now, we know the future of what works out, and one day they're going to come bowing down to him looking for food, which means his dream will come true. But I'm just saying, if you notice the context over here of what's being referred to, it is a context of, do we see the future through the present, or we see the future through some kind of imagination? Yosef has imagination and sees the future in different categories, and really, that's what brilliance is. Just one second. That's brilliance, and that's what genius is. And sometimes people are stuck. Yes, why don't they? They're stuck in a galut mentality. The galut mentality is, farmers? How can we be farmers? Meaning, this is what we do. Which means, that's exactly the point. They're stuck. By the way, Rabbi Soloveitchik used this to talk about why the various Gedolim, all the brothers of Yosef, were unable to see Zionism and unable to see the future. Because he said they saw the future through the present. And they just couldn't imagine something, a different reality taking place. Well, Yosef, who he refers to as religious Zionism, is able to see a new reality take place because this is what God promised. And what Naomi is saying, well, it's obvious that this is what's going to happen. This is the promise. God said this is your land, so it's your land. So one day, this will be our land.
So Yaakov essentially failed in
here. Oh, we always blame the parents, right? They believed only after Mashiach comes. Then it happens. They didn't believe beforehand. So as I said, Rabbi Sal, if you've never read Alei Tshuva, sorry, if you've never read Chamesh Drashot, which is called The Rav Speaks or whatever, read it. First of all, it's the only one that he doesn't make up words, because it was speeches he gave in Yiddish, and then it was translated to Hebrew, translated to English, and whoever translated it made it into in regular language and not in philosophical language. Secondly, it's probably one of the best works you can read in terms of a whole book on Zionism. Even though I was by a hesped given by the Boston Rebbe, the previous Boston Rebbe for Rabbi Soloveitchik, and he said, Rabbi Soloveitchik said that all the talks he gave by the Mizrahi, which is where those speeches came from, he could have given the exact same talks by the Aguda, which just meant to me it was very clear that the Boston Rebbe never actually read the talks, because had he read the talks, then this whole talk I'm talking about now, Yosef and his brothers, is an absolute rejection of Das Torah. That's what it is. Because the argument is, but most of the Gedolim say this, and Rabbi Soloveitchik was saying, yeah, and most of Yosef's brothers were wrong. Okay, next. I mean, but he says that in a much more eloquent way than I just now said it, yeah.
Maybe that's where the Yisrael Ohad Yosef comes in, because the name Yisrael is right, is that he fought with God and fought with man. I mean, that's kind of the battle of his whole identity, where he had to move on to be able to deal with the future and have that vision, and that's when he won, and that's when he got that name. And he saw that in Yosef, so that aspect of him is what loved Yosef, is that understanding of that part of personality that he saw that Yosef had.
Yefeh. So write it down afterwards and publish this. Yefeh Ma'od. Yefeh Ma'od. But that's exactly the issue. The issue is that this is Yisrael who loves Yosef, and it's Yosef sees the future. He sees it very, very differently than the brothers, and Yaakov loves him because of this. This is really the issue. But now you, again, see, this was the brilliance of Rabbi Soloveitchik, because most of us are looking at dreams and just leave it, always a dream. We're just focusing on the bowing down, and we're not paying attention that there's different types of livings that they're making. And when you're telling shepherds that one day you're going to be farmers, hold it, that's a different world. Yosef sees a different world. And they don't begin to get that. Okay, let's continue. You realize we're not going to get very far today. This is great, right? Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef. What do you notice now? It's Yisrael. Sorry, did we skip Yud Bet? Yud Bet. Vayechu Echav Lerot Etzon Avihem Bishchem. So what do? They go right back to, that's where they are. They're nomads. How far do they need to go? They go all the way up to Shechem in order to do it. So over here we have this nomadic life. Again, never imagining planting and doing things right over here. Although it's interesting, Avram planted, right? Avram planted, but over here we find them going, nomads, traveling all the way to Shechem. That's Pasuk Yud Bet. And if you heard the shir before, then I'm sure you know that Chazal tell us that whenever you hear the word Shechem, then you have to get scared, because Shechem, never good things happen by Shechem. Shechem is a bad place. Vayomi Yisrael al Yosef alo achecha ro'im b'shechem l'chav eshlachecha aleihem vayom alo hineni. So again, we notice it's Yisrael who calls Yosef. It's not Yaakov. It's Yisrael who calls Yosef. And what does he tell him to do? He goes, you're going to go there and you're going to tell me how they're doing. Which means that takes us right back to the very beginning. Yosef is telling his father how his sons are doing. Yosef is telling his father how his brothers are doing. And now we're learning, and Yisrael is perfectly comfortable with this. It's also interesting that all the other brothers are working as shepherds and Yosef isn't. So Yosef, who's not working as a shepherd, like the other ones do, he has this exalted status, which again probably takes us back to this feeling that just like Yehoshua was a na'ar for Moshe, he was his second in hand, he was the one who took care of him, he's the one who ministered Moshe. So the same way is that Yosef being a na'ar, he's the one who takes care of his father, he's the one who's there with his father, while all the other ones get to work in a different type of job. Vayomer lo lech re'e et shlom achecha v'et shlom hatzon v'hashiveni davar. And come back and tell me how they're doing. Which is exactly what we heard before, that the brothers don't exactly love him for this, and that's what Yaakov is very happy with this, or you'll correct me and say Israel is. V'yishlecheu mi'emi chevron v'yavushchema. And over here we have a medrash which is quoted by Rashi, that Eimei Chevron should have said Har Chevron, my Eimei Chevron. So it says something that he was sent from a very, very deep place of Chevron. And what's a very deep thing in Chevron? That's where the Avot, that's where Avraham is buried. And that means that this was the covenant that God made with Avraham of the Brit Bein Betarim, that they're going to leave the land, they're going to be slaves in another place, and so on. And history is beginning now. That this is from a very deep place in Chevron that all of this takes place, and that the exile is now about to be set into motion. Now the Jews are going to leave the land. Of course, the irony is that we'll find that the brothers will think that they're going to sell Yosef as a slave, and he's the one who we're going to get rid of. The irony is that God says, well, you thought you can sell your brother, you're all following him, and you're all going to become slaves, you and all of your children. Which means this is when it begins. This is Eimei Chevron, and Rashi believes that that's pshat over here. Pasuk Tedva, V'yimtze'eu ish v'nei Torah b'sadeh. And an anonymous man finds him in the field. And he says, what are you looking for? Now this is so unexceptionable to most of us in the room. A man gets lost and doesn't ask for directions. Like, why is this so... No, he doesn't ask. The other guy says, he doesn't ask. He doesn't ask. The other guy says to him, I see. Other guy says, I see you're lost. Later on, when the brothers are going to start saying, you know, look what we did, we sold our brother. Yosef will say this was God's plan. Yosef sees, meaning what could have happened, he goes down to find his brothers, he goes to Shechem. They're not in Shechem, they're in Dothan. So he could have gone to Shechem, look for them, they're not there, and go home. And the whole story ends. This over here, you know, Ish, or those say Ish Gavriel, this is Gvura, this is Midat Adin. This is God putting... You know, there's a fellow who I know who's been on very, very hard times. And he's depressed and he's upset. And he comes and he talks to me and he says to me, you know, God has completely rejected me. And God, you know, mad at God and so on and so forth. And I keep on raising money and helping him and getting on his feet and paying his rent and so on and so forth. And he says, and God has rejected me. And on top of all that, I have to take money from people. So he came to shul. He comes every now and again. He came to shul yesterday. So I said, so did you say thank you for God? He said, for what? Everything's so bad. I said, for sending you angels. I said, what do you think an angel is? When God sends you people, he goes, the people that paid for your rent, these people are angels that God sent. You should say thank you for God, because there are people in a very difficult situation that God doesn't send the angels to help. Don't be upset and feel bad you're taking the money. God is sending angels to you, and look at them as being angels. I did claim I was angelic yesterday. Upset. Chazal tell us this is an angel that he bumps into. So don't get confused. It was an angel in human form. It was an ish. It was an ish. It was an ish. But it was an angel. In what sense it was an angel? Because it was somebody that God sent, because this is not the way the story is going to end. This is me, Eimei Chevron. The way the story is going to end is not by Yosef coming down, taking a look, can't find him, and go home. And then we get to the saddest verse in the whole thing, which is a verse that Yosef never changes all the way through the story. The guy finds him and he says, "Mat tevakesh? What are you looking for?" "Vayomer et achai anochi mevakesh. I'm looking for my brothers." And that's true all the way through the story. Yosef really feels all of them are brothers. Yosef really wants to treat them all equally. Yosef really wants to treat the B'nai Bilhah, B'nai Zilpah, and the B'nai Leah. He wants to treat them all the same. He really is looking for his brothers. The problem is that his brothers can't look at him the same way. And the way that this plays itself out is that the B'nai Leah end up making a different strategic decision. Yosef elevated the status of B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah. So what did B'nai Leah do? They end up accepting the elevation of those two, but they use them together to form a group to fight against Yosef. Because if all of these are elevated, that's one thing. But if Yosef is gotten rid of, now who's going to be in charge? Now B'nai Leah will. Binyamin's much, much younger. But at this point, how B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah feel? Well, this is great. All these, these six children, which is the biggest block, these six children of Leah are respecting us and treating us as brothers. We're in on their plan. We're going to get rid of Yosef together. This is great. But it was this temptation to join the brotherhood which won over the B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah to quietly be partners in this plan, because now they'll be accepted by the children of Leah. I mean, this is exactly what plays itself out over here, and Yosef becomes the victim of his wanting everyone to be equal, because they all knew that they're not going to be equal, because he is the son of the loved Rachel, and not only that does Yaakov love Rachel, but Yisrael loves Yosef, and as far as the brothers are concerned, Yosef has to be gotten rid of. But Yosef says, as I said, that's the tragedy. Et achai anochi mevakesh. Yosef wants his brothers. V'yomai ish nasumi zeki shamati yamrim neachol dotana v'yelech Yosef achar echa v'yamtzei bo dotan. And he goes and he finds them in Dotan. A map over here. As far as I recall, yeah, Dotan is a little bit north of Shechem. Dotan is what you would today call Jenin, which is also not a nice place. So he ends up going from Shechem to Jenin. Okay. Exactly. By the way, when you put the modern terms on those places, then it's like, oh my God, you're like, okay. We just came straight from a Brit. I was standing next to somebody who lost his son in Jenin. Right? If I would tell him that Dotan is Jenin, no, we understand that's where things get ripped apart. And she was standing next to a woman who lost two sons. You can guess who that was. Okay. You realize this is impossible to. So, Pasuk Yud Tet, Vayomru Ish El Achiv, Hinei Bal Hachalamot Hazeba. They say that here comes the dreamer of dreams. Va'ata l'chu v'nehargehu v'nashlichehu b'chad haborot v'armanu chaya ra'ach latuhu v'nireh mayu chalamotav. You have a whole plan over here. You have the hatred, you have a plan, you have the cover-up. First plan on the table is, let's kill him. V'yishma ru'uvein v'yatzilehu miyadam. Reuven hears this and he decides to save him. I've seen two credible reasons why Reuven wants to do this. One is Reuven's messed up recently. What does Reuven do? What did Reuven do to mess up? He slept with his father's Pilegesh, right? He's the one who starts the thing by saying, "Oh, the children of the Pilegeshim, they're in a lower level." How much of a lower level? They're not even our father. They're our father's possession. And I who will one day be king, yes, kingship, I who one day will be king, I can take her. Just like Oda Adoniah tries to take Avishag. Dad, can I borrow Avishag, take her out for a spin? Right? And David's ready to do. Like, what are you talking about? That is the way that you declare that you're going to be king. That's how to understand what Reuven did over you. Reuven is staking his claim to be king, but you realize how brilliant it is. I'm going to take the Pilegesh. At the same time, all those other children are pretenders. They're not even part of it. And all he has to contend with then is Yosef on the one hand and his younger brothers, which is easy, right? So now what happened? He does something which is outrageous. Yosef is treating the Bnei Plagshim as if they are really brothers. The brothers now buy into this. And what does Reuven go to? He goes into plan B. What's plan B? I lost my status by treating Bilhah as a Pilegesh. Now let me save Yosef, bring him back to their father, and father will obviously want to reward me, and I will now get a new situation. Now, whether how clear this thinking is or not, I don't know. Reuven is not always guilty of clear thinking. Later on, when he wants to go, you know, take Binyamin with him, he says, if I don't bring him back, you can go kill two of my kids, which is something which is a little disappointing and a little surprising as well. But that seems to be the gambit that Reuven is taking over here as well. I'm going to save him and I'm going to bring him back, and therefore I'm going to look good compared to everybody else. So that's, which, by the way, we all know he may not become king afterwards, but he will become second. I mean, there's something good will come out of this, and that seems to be what Reuven is trying to do. The second interpretation could be that he actually feels at this point some kind of a connection with Yosef, and that's for the following reason, is that after he did what he did, he ran the risk of being kicked out of the family. He ran the risk of having no status whatsoever. And what did Yosef say in his dream? You think about the numbers involved, right? There are 11, right, bowing down. There are 11. And Reuven said, there are 11? Meaning I'm still one of them? I'm still, meaning Yosef's, again, what's Yosef's perception as always? Achai, my brothers. And he sees all his brothers as the same. So Yosef seeing all his brothers as the same is beneficial for Bilhah and Zilpah. But who else is it beneficial for? It's also beneficial for Reuven, who ran the risk of losing that status. So as I said, those are the two ways that we could, unless you want to just like give like old fashioned, he's just being nice and decent, but that's so unexpected. Okay. V'yishma Reuven v'yitzileu miyadam. That's an action. He saves him from their hands. By the way, you notice, of course, Yosef's not there yet. All this is taking place as they see Yosef walking across the field. How do they recognize him from afar? Right, didn't say it, but now you all again. When we make a film out of this, now that's the beautiful colors there that they see from afar. There's no question who that is. It's Yosef who's coming. So over here again, we're told that Reuven saves him. V'yishma Reuven v'yitzileu miyadam v'yomer lo nakanu nefesh. We cannot strike somebody. V'yomer leim Reuven al tishpachu dam. Don't spill blood. Now the way that he says it. Yeah, the way that he says this, lo tishpachu dam, don't be involved in an active killing, and that could absolutely be a response to Shechem. This, he's responding to shfichut damim, literally, don't spill blood. Rather, what does he say? Hashlichu oto el habor hazeh, asher b'midbar, v'yad al tishlechu bo. What Reuven says is that killing somebody is messy. Rather, we can call this passive euthanasia. Put him in a bor, and then let nature take its place. That's what he says. They're saying, again, what's on the table? Let's kill him. What does Reuven say? No, don't kill him. Put him over here. But the Torah now tells us his motivation. It doesn't always tell us motivation. Laman hatzil oto miyadam lashivo al aviv. He wanted to do this to save him. But yikasher bo Yosef, and all this happened beforehand, yikasher bo Yosef el echav, v'yafshitu et Yosef ektunato ektunata pasim. They strip him down from the clothing that he's wearing, from this coat of many colors. Why? Because that's the symbol of their hatred. That's the symbol of their hatred towards their brother. And we can put that argument forth if it also may belie their feelings to their father, Asher Alav. They take him and they send him into the pit. And the bor there is empty and there's no water whatsoever. V'yeshvu lechol lechem. And they sit down to have a meal. They take out the pita, they take out the hummus. Later on in the book of Ruth, they talk about dipping the pita in the chometz, So I saw those who wanted to claim that chometz there doesn't mean, it means hummus. It's just the way that they pronounced it in that dialect. They want to dip it, or I guess dipping in chometz may not be all that bad either. But they sit down and they start to eat. This, by the way, so far, what did I say? I said that, you know, one of the saddest. And here we have an unbelievable callous scene. And despite all the protestations of the Rashbam that the brothers are not involved in what's about to take place, they hear his screams coming from the pit. How do I know that? Because they say it later on. All this bad has happened to us because we heard our brother's scream and we ignored it. Which means they're sitting there. Where Reuven is, I don't have a clue. They're all sitting there and they're eating and they're passing the hummus and they're drinking their, their wine. I was going to say it's almost Thanksgiving, so maybe wild turkey. They're drinking, they're eating, they're doing what they're doing, and their brother is screaming from the pit. V'yishvu lechol lechem, v'yisu ena v'yiru v'nei orachat yishmaelim ba'a migilad. And they lift up their eyes and they see that there's this whole entourage or kid
caravan
of Yishmaelim coming from Gilad. Ugmaleim nosim nachot utzri velot hochim larid mitzrayma. And it's on the way to Egypt. Vayom Yehuda elechav. And Yehuda says, and here's the first time that Yehuda gets a speaking role in the Torah. Ma betza. By the way, betza, you have to go like this as you say the word. Right, what are we going to make? Betza's money. Ma betza kinaroga tachinu. What are we going to gain from killing him? By the way, here it's neherog, not lirtsoach. Here it's the herog, to allow him to die. They're going to cause him to die. Like, meaning the first idea was to murder him. The second idea was to leave him in the pit, even though Reuven wants to save him. The third idea is, what are we going to gain from killing him by putting him in the pit? V'kisinu at damo, and it's so messy, we have to cover up his blood afterwards. L'chuvan and karena l'yishma'ilim. Then let's go and sell him to the Yishma'ilim. V'yadeinu al tibo k'yachinu b'sareinuhu. Because he's our flesh and blood. Yishmu echav, and his brothers listen to him. This is preposterous. Which means you read the first half of the pasuk, you know, let's not do this. And then you read the second half, because he's our flesh and blood. So I'm going to tell you what happened here. And I've never seen anybody say this. But here I already wrote it down. So you can try to beat me to it, but you won't. I think as they're looking at this, they have an epiphany. Specifically, who is it that shows up? It's Yishmael. Who's Yishmael? Who are Yishmaelim? Yishmaelim was the rejected son of Avraham who was sent away. You have Yitzchak, the beloved son, and then you have Yishmael, the rejected son. Which means as they're sitting here trying to decide what to do, and it's not easy, there's a lot of pressure on you, make a decision, Yehuda has an epiphany. He hears a bat call. He sees a sign from heaven. He said, God has just now given him a sign telling him what to do. Achenu b'sareinu do. He's our flesh and blood. So what do you do when your flesh and blood of your same father is somebody who you just should not be here anymore? Somebody who is a person who's a terrible, terrible person, who's a bad influence, and you can keep on going on and on and on and on. You know, what kind of world, you know, picture in their mind they've created of how terrible Yosef is. So there is an earlier precedent for this. What's the earlier precedent? The earlier precedent is Yishmael. And what happens to Yishmael? And Yishmael is somebody that gets sent away. If we take a look at source number 2, V'tomu l'Avraham geresh ha'ama hazot ve'et bena, ki lo yirash ben ha'ama hazot im b'ni im Yitzchak, ve'yirad devar ma'od b'ni Avraham alodot b'no, ve'yomer Elokim el Avraham, al yera ve'inecha al hanar ve'al amatecha, ki kol asher tomar lecha sarah shma b'kola, ki b'yitzchak yira lecha zara. Here we have the precedent of getting rid of somebody who is flesh and blood, achinu v'sareinu, of getting rid of him, and it's, don't you realize this is a sign from God? By the way, if that's not good enough, what happens immediately afterwards? Pasuk Kaf Zayin. L'chu v'nem karenu li'yishma'ilim v'yadanu al t'yibo ki achinu b'sareinu v'yishmu echav v'yavru anashim midyanim socharim. And who exactly is Midyan? It's a little bit harder than Yishmael was, isn't it? look at source number 3. Vayasof Avram v'yikach isha u'shmo kitura. Vatilad lo zimron ve'ed yakshan ve'ed madan ve'ed midyan. And so on and so forth. Pasuk dalet u'bnei binyan, so on and so forth. Pasuk vav v'nei ha'pilag shim asher la'avram natan avram matanot v'yishlechem me'al yitzchak beno bodenu chay kedma l'eretz kedem. That what happened? That both Yishmael and Midian are children of Avraham who were sent away, both of them sent away, and as far as the brothers are concerned, watching this, God has just now told them exactly what it is he wants them to do with Yosef. Take him and send him with Ishmaelim, send him with the Midian. By the way, if one sign wasn't good enough, the second sign that just now appeared is absolutely remarkable as they're concerned. Now, I just do want to point one thing out, which is potentially a little dangerous. It's very good to interpret signs when God is speaking to you. It's a little bit dangerous to do this when your heart may not necessarily be pure. And the plan on the table right now was whether to kill your brother or not. It could be that the signs that you're interpreting have nothing to do with what you see. As far as the brothers are concerned, God has now told them exactly what they need to do. Take Yosef, get rid of him, sail down. Which means as far as they're concerned, they did the right thing. As far as they're concerned, this is what God wanted. Yeah, they were a little carried away to kill him and so on. That was not the right thing to do over here. That they will sell him, get rid of him and so on. That Yosef will be gotten rid of and sent with the Ishmaelim and with Midianim and so on. Because that's exactly what Avraham and Sarah did. Sarah said, get rid of Yishmael, the son of this other wife who already got a little too big for his britches, as they say. And Midian, who was gotten rid of by Avraham, or as far as he was concerned. So over here we have the perfect historical precedent staring them in their face, and they listen. This is what God wanted. So let's get rid of him. So we're going to stop today. The story's in the middle. I told you that I didn't get to a tenth of what I wanted to do today, but I hope at least this was interesting. But shall we say to be continued in 2 weeks?